Good morning, Teachers on Fire. It's Tim Cavey back with another edition of Saturday Morning Teacher Talk. I'm here to review the top posts on Education X from the week. The post that warmed my heart, sparked my thinking, and ignited my practice. And I hope you'll find some of the same value in these posts as I go through them together with you this morning. So thanks for joining me live or on the replay. I'm glad to have you here. Would love to see your comments appear in the live chat or in the comments below the post if you are watching on the replay or listening on the podcast. From teacher to teacher on X at teacher to teacher, as it sounds, basically. They write, and I'll zoom in here a little bit, if you're looking for a new approach to support students as they develop deep and dimensional understandings of new vocab, give at Jill Webb's Vocab Throwdown a try. And I always appreciate links to Google Docs. So in this post is a link to her frame. But if you're listening, or if you can't see what I'm describing here for some reason, what Jill has created is basically a competition. It's think about a Freyer model, some kind of a framework that is going to expand on a particular vocabulary word, but she's got the page divided into two pieces. You've got over here team one, over here team two, and each team is going to race to provide a definition, a GIF example of the word, an image example, a meme, a historic example, modern example, use it in a sentence, synonyms and antonyms. And I just love the idea that both teams can sort of see the other team working. On the other side of the page, they can sort of watch them in real time. And I can imagine putting this up on the screen, it could be very, very fun. So I like this idea of the vocabulary throwdown. Thank you to at teacher to teacher. And of course, Jill Webbs for sharing that out. Next up, we've got from Monty Sirey, getting into the topic of assessment. That's not where he spends all of his time, but he does spend a lot of his reflective time there in the assessment space. Monty says, quote, "They won't do it if we don't grade it," end quote. We've all heard that before. PSA, public service, I almost said safety, public service announcement, kids didn't need grades until they needed grades. We created that monster and we continue to feed it. Some of us are trying to starve it, but its appetite for transaction seems indomitable. We knew not what we were doing. Well said, yes. And I am going to be the first to say that students do not need grades in order to learn and in order to complete learning activities. I've seen it in middle school for years now, where students are willing to learn and work, even without the promise of points and letter grades and percentages. Yes, I do live in a proficiency scale environment, but even without the knowledge of how their work will be interpreted and how it will show up in the grade book, students like to learn. Kids like to learn, and that is something refreshing to discover, and it's inspiring, frankly. It's inspiring to discover that. One of the best examples I have of this before I move on is I was doing Genius Hour back when I was a homeroom teacher in eighth grade. I was running Genius Hour weekly with my grade eight students, and they would work all term learning and creating and building toward a final presentation of some kind. And I was wowed by the amount of learning and creativity that took place each term. And here's the fun part. Genius Hour wasn't really reported in the report cards at all. And students really didn't ask me about that. They didn't question it. They just were happy to engage in the learning. And I'll remember that for a long time. That was very, very encouraging to find that out. So if you're stuck in an environment that seems limited by grades, or will this count for marks, that dreaded question, I would encourage you that it is possible. Students do enjoy learning and working without the promise of points as currency. Moving on to Lynette Earle at @ms_Lynette_edu. She says this, "Changing your grading practice is hard work. It requires a mindset shift. This shift takes time, maybe even years, and that's okay. It's also okay to bomb a lesson because you're trying something new. Be with your students in the learning. Show them that challenges and mistakes are normal. Yesterday, I presented in front of 100 educators all about Canva and the wonders of Canva. And although it was a very fun session and a lot of it went well, not everything went perfectly. And I actually had a couple of brain cramps where I could not demonstrate exactly what I wanted to demonstrate because in the moment, just feeling the pressure of all of those eyes quietly listening and watching, I couldn't think of the right features to activate. But there you go. I think it's important for all of us to take risks in front of our students, whatever age those students might be, and model what it is we're trying to encourage. Moving right along, we've got Melissa D at Dean of Math. Let's share that tab next. And she says the feedback that we give our students should make them feel known. Such a short but profound message. Maybe park on that one for a little while. The feedback that we give our students should make them feel known. Should make them feel known. So we're moving beyond the Scantron level and we're saying, how can I integrate a knowledge and appreciation of exactly who my student is into the feedback that I am giving to them? How can I make sure that they feel that I see them, that I understand who they are, and that I appreciate them for the unique profile, the unique set of challenges and strengths and frustrations maybe that they are dealing with? I think that is so important. So thank you, Melissa, for that. Moving on to teacher to teacher, back to teacher to teacher. A lot of great stuff from this account this week. How do you encourage students to reflect on their growth is a question they ask. Educators Katie Novak, UDL, and Catlin Tucker use self-assessment to empower students to own their learning. Check it out. So I love the self-assessment grid, and I have a feeling that maybe I've even shared it before. Frankly, I'm not sure. I feel like I've seen it before, but I just think if we can get our students to complete something like this once a week, think about how simple it is. Think about the work you've completed. You're going to select one piece of work, one piece of learning. What's the standard? What's the learning target? What's the title? How would you assess yourself? And then just answer a few questions about that piece of learning. What it's doing, what this is doing is building that skill, building that habit of self-assessment and that metacognition, right? That we want our students to have. The metacognitive skills to actually say, what is it that is happening to me? What is it that I'm involved in? How is my learning going? And what can I do to move that learning forward? I think if we're not building those skills, we're missing out. And so our students. Hey, if you're joining me in the live broadcast, I'd like to hear from you. Why don't you enter in the live chat? Where are you coming from this morning? I'd love to say hello. Jeremy Jorgensen at Jeremy A. Jorg on X says this: students spend much of their day consuming information. My room is next door to a STEAM class, which is often a noisy buzz of chaotic smiles and curiosity unleashed. Making and creating is an important component of education. This took me right back to a post that I featured last week from Sarah Candela, where she was sort of commenting on another post from Dan Coe, who was talking about how boredom inspires building. And there's more to it, but basically boredom inspires building. We make and build when we have nothing else to do. And she was saying we need to give our students the gift of boredom. I so love that. And I'm reminded again in this post from Jeremy Jorgensen, our students need to be creating. They need to be building things. Ryan Coop is here. Good morning, Tim. Thank you for joining me this morning, Ryan. I hope your week went really, really well. Thanks for joining me on the live broadcast. Ryan is a teacher right here in my city of Surrey, and I've learned a lot from him. Moving right along to the next post, Megan Alfano, hopefully I'm displaying this one correctly. She says, teacher Twitter. Now, she's insisting on still calling it teacher Twitter. I call it Education X. That's my new resolution. Ryan says, love that last post. It's great to get students involved in the process. Yeah, I completely agree. And I love the template from Katie Novak and Catlin Tucker. I've had something similar in the past, but I really like their questions. Josh Tovar is here to say good morning as well. Buenos dias, hermano. Good morning to you as well, my brother, Josh Tovar, charismatic principal from Texas. So appreciate your support. And Adrian Niebauer. Adrian Niebauer is saying, good morning, Mr. KV. Thanks for sharing all these great posts from the week. Thank you so much, friends. It is so good to see you. And I look forward to chatting to Josh and Adrian and Ryan, maybe you too, sometime in weeks to come here on the live show coming at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Well, getting back to this post from Megan Alfano, she says, what if EDU? Let's start a new hashtag, she says. What if EDU? And she says, I'm going to start with what if we just let kids read what they want to read? Kind of a radical thought, right? What if we just let kids read what they want to read? But I like the spirit of just let's just put all of our assumptions aside and just rethink this education thing. And I know that would throw our English teachers for a loop. I mean, what do you do for novel studies and poetry studies and short stories and all of that when we're just giving students free rein with their reading? But hey, it's an interesting suggestion. What if we can certainly move toward it, right? With more independently selected reading. Let's jump to this post from TCEA. And I was just in a session yesterday on UDL. And so this is fresh on my mind. I just like these scaffolding steps that we can take for our multilingual learners, our multilingual students. And so they say, why don't we make the task more accessible by placing synonyms around unfamiliar words? I do that sometimes, even on Google Classroom, but I need to do more of it. Inserting images to provide context. So if we're putting together a quiz or a test or some other kind of learning activity, it's so easy now to drop in clip art and graphics and just pull things that give students a little bit more context. We see that done pretty well, I have to say, in some of our math textbooks. Over here, they've got writing multi-part questions as individual questions, so breaking them down. I like that idea, and that's a mistake I've made in the past. We all know that when we create a two or three-part question on a math quiz or test or some other kind of summative assessment, that often there will be students who miss one or two of the parts, right? They just focus on one question. So why not break those down? Providing word banks and embedding sentence starters and sentence frames. None of this is about lowering the bar. I think that's an important principle in UDL. We're not lowering the bar. What we're doing is we're creating better on-ramps for all learners, and we're allowing more learners to actually represent their learning. Shifting gears a little bit to the area of behavior, Nicholas Emmanuel. And first, let me just feature this comment from Josh. He says, that is how I learned English. I read Marvel University, not the passages in the literature book. And Josh is going back to that comment from, let me see if I can pull it up here. Yes, going back to this comment from Megan, that what if we simply allowed our students to just read what they want to read? So that's good testimony from Josh Tovar. That's how he learned to read English, was from Marvel. And that's a good vote of confidence, right, Josh, for comics and anime as well. Getting back to this comment from Nicholas Emmanuel, I'd love to hear, if you're in the live chat, what do you think of this one? He says, I'll zoom in here a little bit. He says, I feel like I have good rapport with many students, but the effect of my rapport on student work and completion, effort, ethic, isn't having the same reach it had in the past. Before, that rapport could encourage students to work and try. Not as much now. I thought that was really interesting. This one gave me pause. Are we not getting as many miles, let's say, out of the rapport that we build with students? Many of us enjoy students. We enjoy their presence. We build strong rapport with students. I think we can do some humble bragging in that respect. I look at the people in the live chat right now. I know Ryan and Adrian, Josh, you're all very, very good at that. I wonder what you think of this comment from Nicholas Emmanuel, that perhaps we're not getting as many miles, we're not getting as much of a positive response from students based on that rapport as maybe we used to in the past. I can't actually say that that is the case for me. I'm not sure. I wanted to give that a chance. Julie, in the responses, says, "You could not have put my exact current state of teaching any better. Would love some advice on this." And Nicholas responds to her, "I wish I knew what to do next. I'll be leaning more into a warm demander approach, I think." And so there's something to be said about the warm demander as well. I'm not seeing any comments or responses to that post just yet, so I'll move on. But I'd love to hear what you think if you're in the live chat or on the replay. What do you think about this idea that we're not getting as many miles out of the rapport that we used to get from students? We're not getting some of the same compliance, cooperation, effort, ethic, all of those good things. Julianne at EdTech Math Teach says this, "I was thinking back to when I first started teaching. I pretty much taught, copied, graded, emailed, called home. Now I do all that and now manage an LMS, collect crazy amounts of data, log that data, log interactions with home, create videos, and attend four times as many meetings." Well, I think there's some truth here. I think there's some truth here in this comment, and I'm a part-time administrator, so I own this and I wear this as well. How can we protect teacher fire? How can we protect teacher sustainability? The one item that I would add to her list is email. And I don't know if my inbox is the same as yours, but I know email takes a lot of time to keep up with. Even though I'm quick on the keyboard, it takes a lot of time and can't do it every single day. Adrian, commenting on the last post, I believe, he says, "Building strong relationships is never a waste of time, 100%. So even if we're not getting as many miles out of the rapport that we used to get when we would build positive rapport with students, it's never a bad investment. It's never a waste of time. Always the right move." And okay. So anyway, back to Julianne's comment here. Yes. So when I compare, so I entered the profession in 2001. And yes, I am that old. And we were, of course, living in a no email environment at that time, or very little. No, we must have had email, but it was very early stages and it wasn't used by schools in the way that it is today. And certainly, I don't think schools had their own domains, right? I was probably just using my Hotmail address in terms of email. Much of what we were doing was there weren't as many meetings. I probably didn't even know what an IEP was, frankly, when I started the profession. Learning and teaching is just so much more complex today. So, Julie, I think you are putting your finger on something really important, and that's something we have to keep an eye on as education leaders and administrators. Enoch Roque is here to share some hope with us. If you're going through a difficult time, she says, "It won't always be like this. It will get better, and you've got this." And she shares a quote from the late Maya Angelou. I believe late. Hopefully I'm thinking of the right person. "Every storm runs out of rain." Every storm runs out of rain. And that's a quote from her new book, Phenomenal Teacher. Not easy to say, but Phenomenal Teacher. If you are a mom, I know Annick is a mom of four boys, and she still finds time to teach her class effectively. Josh says, getting back to the topic of email, he says, "I hardly email our team members." All right. Interesting. I would have some questions for you, maybe over coffee sometime. I'll compare inboxes and I'll say, "Hey, how would you communicate this if you're not sending it by email? I would be really curious to know." And he also adds, "Kids will walk on fire if they know you care." What's that great quote, Josh, about kids can't learn? It'll come to me in a moment. You know the one I'm talking about. But again, Josh says, "Kids will walk on fire if they know you care." All right, moving on to the next one. We're coming to the end, and I like to end with technology. And friends, I don't know if you teach math, but this list of prompts I thought was phenomenal, just excellent. Third post I think I'm featuring from Teacher to Teacher, and they are sharing from at Mrs. U Teaches Tech. But think about if you are a math teacher, how ChatGPT could transform your practice if you're using these prompts. Let me just duck back into the broadcast center and make sure I'm not missing any comments. Adrian says this, "If a child can't learn the way we teach, maybe we should teach the way they learn." What an awesome quote from Ignacio Ignacio Estrada. I'm doing a terrible name. Ignacio Estrada says, one more time, if a child can't learn the way we teach, maybe we should teach the way they learn. Awesome. Love it. ChatGPT prompts for math. Okay, check these out. We've got 10. I don't know if I'll read all 10, but these are so good. Number one, write 10 word problems with answers that require students to, and just insert math concept. Two, create a simple step-by-step guide for solving, insert math concept. Now, these are gold. Like, I'd be like, oh, yes, of course, I should lay that out on my Google Classroom post so that if a student is at home and they're frustrated and they need a step-by-step guide and they're forgetting about ChatGPT or they don't know how to give it the right prompt, there it is. I've given it to them. Third one, I'm teaching, insert topic, to grade, insert grade, and they love whatever the interest is. Make a list of connections to help them stay engaged. That's a really fun one. Number four, recommend some fun activities for students to reinforce their understanding of concept. Number five, how would you introduce the concept to a grade student who is struggling with whatever issue? This one is fun. Number six, introduce concept in a song to the tune of, yes, I read that correctly, introduce concept in a song to the tune of a particular song. Wow. Could it do that? That would be pretty special. Right. Number seven, write an email to parents with an overview of what students will learn. Number eight, create a number of review questions about topic for a unit test. That was similar to number one, wasn't it? Yes. Oh, that was word problems. Okay. Fair enough. And number nine, make a list of 10 scenarios where a said concept would be beneficial. I just think about something like adding fractions, right? Or whatever it might be. Make a list of scenarios where that concept might be beneficial. I think that would be really, really helpful as well. Well, just a list of amazing prompts. I shared this on my school math chat, even though I'm not teaching math this year. I shared this graphic, and if you're looking for it, it's, again, from teacher to teacher. And they posted it on, let's see if I can get a date here, November 8th. November 8th. Last one is a fun one. It's from Canva for Education. Let's have some fun. Now, hey, if you're in the live chat, I do see a few live viewers right now. I'm going to put this to you. Can you come up with the idioms used to generate these images? I'll see if I can zoom in just a little bit more for you. Let's see who can get these correctly. We've got 1, 2, 3, and 4. Name the idiom. I'm going to be calling it here from the live chat. I think that's as large as I can go. All right. I see a comment. Someone's calling one. My wife is here, Christine Cavey, my number one fan and sponsor of the podcast. Nice to see AI getting constructively utilized. Oh, I think you're referring to the last post. Time flies. Yes. Okay. So she's calling them, friends. We've got time flies. Number two. Yes, correct. Adrian is here. Number one, standing on top of the world, or on top of the world, I thought. Yeah. And he's also got, yeah, time flies. So, Christine, I'm giving you credit for number two. Adrian's got number one. Head in the clouds, number three. Head in the clouds. And number four, I wasn't 100% certain on, but let's see if Adrian or Christine can figure out number four. I'll zoom in on it here for you a little bit. Okay, I don't see any guesses. I'm thinking this is an idiom that, doesn't it go something like shoot for the moon? Is that an idiom? Aim for the moon, shoot for the moon? I think it's shoot for the moon. It is sort of this idea of just go big or go home kind of idea. So yes, Adrian's on the same page. Shoot for the moon. I think we've got it, Adrian. That is the idiom. Let's call ourselves correct on that one. Thank you, Canva for Education. I played with this a little bit yesterday in my Canva workshop with AI text to image generation, and some of the formats for the images that come out are really quite fun, and we need to be making better use of them in our classrooms. Hey, teachers, thank you so much for joining me. Let me go back full screen here as I wrap this up. Thank you so much for joining me live or on the replay this week. Again, these were some of the posts on EducationX that warmed my heart, sparked my thinking, and ignited my practice this week. I hope you are finding value here on this platform, X, formerly Twitter. Hope you're still finding value here and are contributing to the community. Tuning in when you can. I know we don't always have time, but it is such a great and vibrant place. So much to be learned, so much room for each one of us to grow. Thank you so much again for tuning in. Wherever you are, take care, my friend. Share an encouraging message to lift up a colleague and keep that fire for learning burning bright. I'll see you hopefully soon in my next video. Take care and have a great week. Bye-bye. Even when you feel low, you can still go. Even when you feel slow, you can still go. Even when there's no hope, you can still go. I never answer to no, man, I still go. Go, go.